Good evening once again from Hutton Orbital. This is your weekly roundup of the news from around the galaxy. I'm Rudolf Hucker.
I'm Harry Balzac, and other than just hanging around, I've got the running order for the show. And it tells me that we've got another Encyclopedia Galactica later in the show from the pen of Commander Wotherspoon.
I'm Wilma Fingerdoo, and I'll be asking Flossie for this week's sports reports.
I'm Roger Vatt, and I'm this evening's Stunt Snockers, bringing you up to date with everything in Hutton Systems.
And I'm Norma, and without Lou here this evening, I put away my pan. Don't worry, I can get it out again if I need. And I'll be asking Amelia Hawk what she's got her teeth into this week.
All that, plus the sky tonight, looking upward and outward, and telling us things we didn't know about the galaxy around us. But first, the headlines.
Beams up, thanks to Scotty.
So long, sing song, ding dong.
A piece of history from when size really did matter.
Is it Groundhog Day again already?
Has anyone seen this man?
Canon shows how you can swipe right into another body.
Norma tells me I have to stand in for Lou tonight.
I've been uncovering what everyone's up to.
First this evening, in the world of space engineering, there are few icons as well-respected, fictional or otherwise, than the great Montgomery Scott. Icons of the worlds of science, mathematics and engineering have had theorems, equations and methods named after their way of doing things. Pythagoras invented the original Mark III Cobra design. Euclid, the dodecahedron space station. Murphy, the mission system that spawns trips to Hutton, but the great Scott. Okay, he was actually Canadian, but was a whiz with accents amongst his many skills. Invented the engineer's best friend. Creative estimating, also known as buffer time. Unlike many galactic operating systems which estimate time remaining based on a combination of divination, dowsing, and sticking their finger in the air, creative estimating uses the very sound principle of telling someone demanding your best spanner work that it'll take 2 hours on the basis they need it in one, and then actually completing it in 30 minutes, leaving enough time for a glass of scotch, some haggis, and a quick lap of the deck whilst playing your bagpipes. All to the cheers of everyone who you've just saved. This principle can be seen in action over in Colonia. When engineers first arrived, hot on the heels of Jacques and his Quientin stills, their repertoire was limited. Yes, they could breathe on your dirty drives, spit and polish your beam laser, and maybe give your little limpets a tiny tickle, but that was about it. Never fear, the engineers told us. Keep engineering your gear with us and we'll get better over time. The quantum wasn't actually defined, other than to say it was more than soon and less than ages. Pilots living on Colonia have plugged the gap by making occasional spanner tourism trips back to the bubble to put a little more poke in their asp or trim some of the excess from their mass by drilling holes in everything. Quietly, in the background, Operation Montgomery Scott has been beavering away. Yes, that's both a Scottish and Canadian creature. Forcing the engineers to work tirelessly on improvement after improvement, like some brogue-accented Mr. Miyagi. Blueprint on, blueprint off. Ages became later. Later became soon. Soon became immediately and imminently morphed into now. Yes, Marsha Hicks from the Tier system has been the latest colonic engineer to announce an upgrade. taking her knowledge of frag cannons all the way up to grade 5. Yes, with 1.6 million attempts out of 1.8 million, the bunch of fives you can now get over at Colonia include Etienne Dawn with life support, power distributors, power plants, sensors, wake scanners, plasma accelerators, and sneeze cannons all up at grade 5. Marsha, with collector and prospector little pit controllers, fuel scoops, frag and multi-cannons. Mel Brandon, with everything from thrusters and frameshift to shields and energy weapons, though it should be noted that due to a trademark debate, shield banks can't currently go as high as skills indicate. And Petra, with hull improvements. Dumbass and sneaker missile racks rounding out the availability. For the combat pilot, there are even engineering recipes that are only available in Colonia now. Yes, buffer time is up, and we're into overdrive, courtesy of the engineers. And of course, Montgomery Scott.
Following on from last week's report about a potential transformation of the last night of the Mug's rendition of For the Mug into the humming chorus from Madame Butterfly by leaving out the words, we are pleased to report that the matter has finally been settled. The reassurance that we gave our listeners last week was actually warranted for once, and we have had confirmation in writing, albeit writing but slightly shaky and using a rather unusual shade of wax crayon, that a flash mob of up to 3 people plus 1 man in an office down the corridor will be tasked with singing something approximating the correct words at the appropriate time. The organisers took the pains to point out the confusion about whether the words For the Mug were to be sung originally arose because their only copy of the full set of lyrics had been misplaced. Misplaced in this case to line the bottom of the conductor's pet Ling Lang's cage. The disappointing thing is that the attendance has been limited to Hollowmes exclusively, so the only people who will know or care if you sing the correct words or just gaze at the screen laughing at all of the ridiculous outfits will be the people in your own home. As always.
Code warriors everywhere are going glassy-eyed in wonder at some unearthed technology this week. And we don't mean the piratical kind and the kind of ocular implant that hides under their eye patch. Years after the discovery of Commander Jameson's crashed Cobra Mark III, first edition, archaeologists uncovered a hitherto unseen data stick backup of ship software wedged in the runners of the pilot's chair. Whilst inroads have been made into rediscovering some of the earliest history of human-thargoid interaction, which, as far as we can tell, was punctuated by pew-pew and more than a little boom, the actual ship software, as installed, was corrupted on landing, giving no insight into the Thargoids' misjumps, little fuckers that they launched, and how they compare to modern hyperdictions and Thargoid variants. With the programming skills required to squeeze an entire ship's flight system, trading computer, life support management, and of course galactic map into one ancient data stick, complete with moving parts and a pencil for rewinding it should it all get tangled, long since forgotten, it's taken archaeocodologists ages to turn all the hexadecimal into something that they could read. Project leader Commander Moxon has been at the forefront of these discoveries, revealing detailed schematics of the system's Space Kruger light-fast motors, the Irukon through space drives, Zyman shield generators, and of course the Sin Pleasure relaxer pads that were standard on the old Iron Ass herself. The Cowell and McGrath shipyards at Lave, original manufacturing facility for the Mark III, lost all records of the original specification, but after tireless untangling of the machine code, Moxon is now able to compare which space jump technology with the more modern and safer frameshift drive systems. In a surprising reveal, he also managed to unearth IFF data on a number of long-missed ships from the galaxy. Gone from even the Tonisla ship graveyard, the Gecko, Boa, and of course, Moray Starboats. He has supplied information to the major ship manufacturers under a GPL license in the hopes that next year's licence for atmospheric landings will herald a new era in shipbuilding and bring back some classic designs. At Hutton, as a bunch of crusty old relics ourselves, we can only applaud the pilot's determination to unearth the history of spaceflight and resurrect some of these classic designs.
After Hutton News exclusively broke the story of the breakout at the Dastardly Don's menagerie last week, we understand that members of the Pilots Federation now have the situation under control. Not without a little struggling. Security camera footage from their offices over in Shinrata have seen a number of their best battling the monster and bringing him under control. The investigative team dispatched to the Don's home system dodged the dinosaurs, eschewed the zoo, and skipped the queues for the runaway mine train and went straight for his labs, hoping to catch him in the act of doing something so nefarious, so bad, so evil that they would have no choice but to up his notoriety by one and steal all his tasty cargo. What they discovered in the abandoned lab had them reaching for their 1980s film library to work out what a groundhog was, whether time cops was a thing, and of course looking over their shoulders for time bandits. Yes, the Don appears to have decided to live his life 25 seconds at a time, refining his dastardly deeds in an infinite loop in the hopes of achieving evil perfection before the batteries ran out on his time machine. Documents indicate that he's been working with the Ratloop Corporation, and between them, they built a Lemnis Gate, a devastating galactic pun-powered portal that leverages the science behind Lemnis Gate loops. Yes, the Mobius Strip strikes back. When will the Don return from his never-ending loop? When will he have gone the full Fruit Loop in the process or mended his wicked ways? Is this the vaunted time stone that lets Doctor Strange give heroes the finger? Was 25 seconds all it took to stop our very own Lou Snockers from achieving a record Hutton run? We don't know. But as our reporters have got a loopy Lemnis Gate hangover and can't tell if they're coming or going, it will take us a while to work out what the heck's going on. All we can tell is that in the Don's world, space legs are a thing. But you can only enjoy them 25 seconds at a time.
Listeners are asked to check all of their sheds, outbuildings, ship hangars, planetary bases, SRV cockpits, and cargo holds, especially if the latter was full of Centauri Megagen the last time you looked. Cecil B. Trumpington, our vagabond venophile, our drifting dipso, our itinerant inebriate, has gone missing. Again. Cecil was last seen asleep in the cockpit of his new Krait Mark II that he acquired during a poker game with three of King Hanky's clones and a heavily disguised Leia Wolf. Rumours that he had arranged the poker game as an excuse to meet with the progenitor in private have been denied, and hints that he might have gone all in have elicited nothing but red-faced silence. Cecil's ship was transported back to the bubble aboard a fleet carrier, but on arrival, the usual announcement of end of line, all change, and the Onion Head advert, see it, say it, snort it, echoed around in vacant crate cockpit. A trail of empty gin bottles aboard the fleet carrier led to an empty docking bay that smelled strongly of olives, so our hope is that Cecil made it safely to another ship that was departing. So if you've noticed that look on your cocktail cabinet has been forced, or you've heard a faint cry of cheers, dear boy, from a distant corridor, please get in touch with the local branch of the RSPCA. That's the really sozzled, peripatetic Cecil Association.
For many a pilot, close encounters of the gravitic kind tend to come about through inattention. Luckily, Space is big. You wouldn't believe... Okay, you've all heard the line. It's enormous, and most of it is empty space. However, dotted around the place are balls of gas, big sucky holes, bad Kevin Costner movies, and of course, space potatoes. These planets have a gravitic effect all of their own, unconnected to the science, unaffected by distance. They attract objects that make their way under their own propulsion with the sole purpose of causing them to crash. Canon and Interstellar, however, are more concerned with some strange side effects when traditional F equals little g, little m, big M over R squared mixes with this dark force. And a rare but observable two-body problem. Having adapted some complicated calculators and upgraded them with snippets of code nicked from a few dating websites they no longer have profiles on, the boffins have been investigating the two-body interaction of massive objects in a project called Rhubarb and Custard. Commander LCU, no fool like one, has taken his dating algorithm and can now predict with total accuracy whether two bodies will meet, attract, and, on a regular basis, merge, before parting again, only to come back for seconds at a fixed interval later in a gigantic galactic dating dance of mammoth proportions. For more information on his calculations, so you can go the full peeping Tom on the damage-proof collisions, you can go to the Galnet website canon.interstellar. Next on his agenda, the three-body problem, fraught with ethics and, of course, blocked by many a family-safe filter. LCU will be hunting for galactic threesomes that are sure to boggle the mind.
Hello, mates. Lou's trusted me with a BGS update this week, and I'm really stoked about it. I never realised that becoming a custodian would bring a shot of this kind of fame. At the tip of the influence, there's been a bit of a spurt in Leighton 145141, and steady swelling in PSPF LF2 and Wolf 124. I'm sure the custodians are getting on top of these, so I expect to see them getting it nice and solid by the time Lou gets back. Remember, anything over 55, and Lael starts to turn her nose up. Checking out the bottom, Ross 671 could do with a bit of a prod, and Wolf 25 has been gradually drooping, so that could do having a bit extra pumped in it, if that sounds good to you lovely truckers. After a shaky start, a touch of the old electile dysfunction, you might say, we surged to a climactic victory in LP 53281. Glory to his fluffiness. So you don't need to tell me, but we could do with making a post-election thrust in there to prevent a resurgence by our opposing factions is our top priority right now. Of course, I'm telling you because that's my job for tonight, and I want to make a good impression, so I get asked back. But I know I don't need to. I think not now. Over in Colonia, it's more of the same. We're not far off an election in Tyr. We're trying to ignore that. We're even in Pytheas, and we're sitting pretty in Il Procol Centauri and Deriso. So maybe a little boost in those two systems. But apart from that, just keep making money however you see fit. Now, I shall hand you over to the beautiful Norma. I don't know how she puts up with Lou's filth, to be honest. He must be an absolute angel.
Firstly, for French-speaking pilots, the Grand Tournament 3306 take place on September the 7th, 9th, 11th, 12th and 13th. There are a wide range of events, such as races and SRV combat. Details are at remlock-industries.fr/grand, that's grands-tournois, that's tournois-3306. I'm sure somebody will paste that into the chat. Continuing the international theme for Japanese-speaking commanders, there's the Fighter One Galactic Championship, organised by Jasper Amulet, which had its first event in November last year. This is an event for ship-based fighter jets. The six types of plane that can compete are Taipan, Imperial Fighter, Condor, Trident, Javelin and Lance. Details are in the forums, and our short link for this one is bit.ly/fighter1galactic. That's all one word, fighter1galactic. We have information on an event which has already started, Real Men Race in Lederhosen, from Alec Iron Bucky Turner. The race, hosted by Commander Ashnak, is something quite unique, a race where you have to gauge in advance how fast you think you're going to be and pick your launch time accordingly. Details are in the Buckyball Racing Club 3306 Discord channel and in the forums, and we have a quick link, bit.ly/realmenrace. Those buckyballers never do things by halves. They're also helping to organise the Colonia speedrun. Get from Buckyball's home station of Rebuy Prospect to Jack Station in Colonia. There are prizes of Steam gift cards and shift paint jobs up for grabs, and the competition runs up to midnight Pacific Standard Time on September the 13th. Details in the forums, and our short link is bit.ly/ColoniaSpeedrun. Loremaster Drew Wager is starting a new tour of the part of the galaxy that you cannot afford to miss. Drew will regale you with tales of old, when the galaxy was young, and show you sights and sights of interest. Starts October the 1st, 8 p.m. UK time. That's 7 p.m. game time. Our short link for this one is bit.ly/AstroTourByDrew. And talking of community information, don't forget to tune in to Lave Radio every Tuesday. And finally, news on Turning the Wheel. They expanded out of Enyanwu into LTT 5455. Immediately upon the expansion cooldown period, HR4979 expanded as well, as they had it above 75% the whole time. They landed in LTT 5455 and immediately won their invasion in a sweep 4-0. The next day they initiated war for second place. They have a game plan in place to take control of LTT 5455 within a week, with the obvious 4-day delay for the war, and will look to expand one more time, which should take them to their target system to test Capital Sol. They are currently shaping the HR4979 expansion to make sure that it's in the direction of Lave. And that's all the community news I have from the community this week. If you know of any upcoming events that you'd like us to mention, please get in touch.